Welcome to the first In the Moment magazine podcast. I'm Sarah Orme, In the Moment's digital editor, and I'm joined by Rebecca Sullivan, the author of The Art of the Natural Home, to find out what's inspired her to live a more natural life. So, Rebecca, how did you start on this path?
My gosh, it feels like a very long path that I will never come to the end of and never master, so to speak. But really, it came from my work in the Granny Skills Movement. And the Granny Skills Movement is all about protecting our elders' knowledge and tradition and skills. And so I guess I've been working on this idea around us living more like our grandmothers for years and years and years. And it first started out all about food, and then given that I work in food, and I started picking up labels and trying to read them, and it was like deciphering the Da Vinci Code. And for me, I sort of thought, well, if I bang on about what I put into my body by way of food, then it should be me talking about what I'm putting into my body in other ways, i.e. through my skin, through the toxins that I breathe. And I started reading these labels, trying to figure out what was in things, and I was blown away by being this, you know, told something's natural because the marketing companies have said so, and it's not natural at all. So that's where it all sort of started.
Okay, so what sort of particular things did you notice on the labels that jumped out at you as being really unnatural?
Well, words that I can't pronounce, for one, and can't remember because they made me angry. But, I mean, things like, you know, those little plug-in air fresheners that make you cough because they smell so fake and toxic. They're one of the most harmful things we can have in our home, whereas you can actually make your own air freshener using beautiful herbs and flowers and a bit of lemon and some water, you know, and 3 minutes of your time, and you know exactly what's in that bottle. You've probably saved yourself, you know, 7, 8, 9 pounds by doing it, and it's traceability, and you're not harming your family. So it's those sort of little things to me that mean the most.
Yeah. So have you done a lot of research into what things are harmful in the home then?
Look, I'm no expert in the words that I can't pronounce by any means, and I'm not going to tell anyone that. But I know what is natural, and really it's the things that you can eat. It's the things you've got in your pantry and your garden already. So it's all about this, I guess, this story of frugality, which my grandmother's the most frugal person you've ever known. And she uses, still to this day, bicarb, vinegar and salt to clean everything, and lemons. And it works. And so it costs nearly nothing. It works. And you know it's not toxic because you can eat all of those things. I mean, I wouldn't recommend going and eating spoonfuls of bicarb, but at least you know you can if you had to. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me a bit more about your granny then.
Oh my God, she is an incredible human being. But the grandmother, like the granny skills movement, started because I actually lost my great-grandmother, Lil, her mum. And I'd been working in food for a really long time. And when my great-grandmother Lil passed away, my mum had saved me some of her things. And in her this little box of things were all of these awards. And so it turned out my great-grandmother Lil was this award-winning baker in the 30s in the Women's Own Cookery competitions. And I'd never seen her bake. And you can only imagine someone that's worked in food for such a long time to then go and find out that their great-grandmother was this award-winning baker for her Victoria sponge, and you'd never seen her bake. I mean, my little heart broke into a million pieces. And that's where this granny skills idea came from, because I knew that I couldn't be possibly the only person that had regret in not spending time with their elders. And so her daughter, Pauline, my grandmother, is like the queen of sustainability, but not because she is a hipster and because it's on trend and because it's cool to do so, because she's always done it that way, because she had no choice. She grew up very poor. You know, she was around during the wars, and, you know, during that time, you didn't eat food flown in from Peru because you felt like asparagus in the middle of winter. You ate what was in season, you ate what was local, and you didn't waste a thing. It was no-nonsense stuff. And so when people ask me about being sustainable, my grandmother is the prime example of that.
So would you say it's about relearning skills that we've forgotten then, or perhaps we don't practice anymore and we haven't had passed on to us?
Definitely. It's, we could calling it the granny skills, or it's the forgotten skills. You know, one of my heroines is Doreen Allen of the Ballymaloe fame in Ireland, and she's always talked about forgotten skills. And that's everything from knowing how to make a scrambled egg to, you know, boning a chicken to making jam or pickling the seasons. These are forgotten skills. These are granny skills. These are basic things that not only bring you so much joy when you learn how to do them, they actually do save you money and they are better for your health.
Okay, so what would be your main source for these ideas? Are they mainly from your grandmother, or have you picked things up from older books and that kind of thing as well?
I think it's a combination of things. It's like anything, when it becomes your passion or your work or something that's part of your lifestyle, you want to find out things from everyone. I found throughout my entire career that I'd be drawn to grannies and just having these random conversations and finding these random recipes and always asking grannies for their recipes wherever I went. And this was long before the granny skills concept was an idea. I think it's because I love granny food as well. It's comforting. It brings you so much joy, and it reminds me of my childhood, and it's nostalgic. And there's always a lot of butter, which I love butter. But, it's one of those things. So by mistake, I guess I've always been asking for tips and tricks. And I'm not really sure why or how it started, but it's always been that way. And now I guess it's part of my life. And I find that, cooking from scratch and all of those things that we would consider being a granny skill, fermenting, preserving, pickling, making your own, cleaning products, they're all simple things that we've forgotten how to do. But once upon a time, everyone had to do it themselves. You couldn't buy a $30 body scrub in every shop, corner store. Not that my granny would have used a body scrub, but you know what I mean. Those same principles were, everyone used to know how to do them. And now, very sadly, very little people know how to do them.
Okay, so would you say that making your own things, such as your own cleaning products and beauty products and hair shampoo, is it something that most people can find the time to fit into their daily lives?
I knew you were going to ask that. That's the million-dollar question, because it's the first thing people say to me is, I don't have time to do that. You must have all this time. I argue with anyone, and without sounding like I'm being nasty or picking on anyone, everyone has time to do this stuff. I argue that everyone's priorities are different now to what my grandmother's would have. My grandmother had, three jobs, five kids, and she still cooked from scratch because she didn't have a choice. Ready meals weren't affordable back then like they are today. She still made all these things. I'm talking about, it takes 20 seconds to make your own spray and wipe. It takes 30 seconds to make your own blusher that will cost you 60 pence. It's made of arrowroot powder, some raw cacao powder, and a little bit of pigment colour. You shake it in a jar and you've got a blusher that costs you 60p, not £30. You know exactly what's in it, and you smell like a chocolate bar. I mean, who doesn't want to smell like a chocolate bar?
What's not to love about that? That's brilliant.
You probably get your face licked on the street as well. I mean, it's a double bonus.
Well, I don't know that that's a selling point.
but for me, I just think our priorities have changed. And not everyone wants to do this. And this, if this becomes a chore, making your own things, then don't do it. Go and buy it. But if you're going to buy these products, at least do a little bit of research into what's natural, because I think once you start digging, you'll find that a lot of things that are sold as natural are not natural at all, and you'll probably start to become very angry. But what I've also found is, since the book came out, I get all of these beautiful emails and tags in Instagram and social media of people that have found so much joy in refinding these skills, and 13-year-old girls who are now having potion parties because they are loving being able to make their own makeup, and they get together on the weekends and they don't sit there on their phone grunting at their parents, being teenagers. They're sitting there making their own makeup from natural ingredients, from things from the pantry. And that, to me, just makes me so happy. I mean, that feels like I could retire right there, knowing that teenage girls are having potions parties and taking complete control over what's going into their body from a really young age. I mean, that to me is really empowering stuff.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. So I was looking at the skin products in the book. Would you say that they're actually better for your skin using natural products?
Oh, well, I mean, anything is better than putting chemicals into your body, full stop. And it's also better for the environment because it's not chemicals going down our drain. It's also better for the environment by way of packaging. If you think about all of the packaging that you're buying from the shop, you can just chuck it in a recycled jar. Chemicals are chemicals, and they do things to your skin. You know, they tighten your skin. They may make your wrinkles look visibly less, and all of those things that they sell you. But at the end of the day, I'd rather have a few more crow's feet and know that what I'm putting on my skin is not damaging me or the environment, and bringing me great amounts of joy by experimenting with the smells and the different types of oil and the things, and trying to beat the system, so to speak.
Okay. Another thing I noticed when I was looking in your book is that a lot of the cleaning product ingredients sound a bit Victorian. So you've got things like borax and Epsom salts. Mm-hmm. Are those fairly easy things for people to find in the shops?
Look, and borax is one of those things that's still arguable. So I'm not a borax expert. I don't work in the mine. I know it's mined from the ground. So where it says borax, some people will say that that's still a dangerous thing. All the borax recipes are for cleaning. So I would never put borax on my skin, which I've, you know, done a lot of research and read a lot of very old books where borax did used to get used on the skin. I would never do that, and I would never recommend ingesting it. I think it's perfectly safe to use in cleaning products. But the great thing about borax is wherever there's a call for borax, you can actually use bicarb soda and it works just as well. And don't tell me, I swear every person has a box of bicarb in the back of their cupboard somewhere. So Epsom salts are just fantastic. I mean, they're so good for achy bones and tired bodies. So yeah, they do sound a bit that, but that's just because we don't use them anymore. But they've all come back into vogue since the word natural is definitely floating around a bit more now, and those sort of things are becoming back into fashion. So they're very easy to buy, very easy to buy.
Okay, should we move on now and talk a little bit about the food in your books? Mm-hmm. I found it quite interesting when I was reading it, looking at fermenting. Mm-hmm. In particular, the thing that stood out to me was sauerkraut.
Yes.
And the benefits of pickling your cabbage. Mm-hmm. And just, I was blown away by the amount of vitamins that are in it. So it's like vitamin A, vitamin K, all sorts of things. And it did make me think a bit, is sauerkraut an underrated superfood?
Sauerkraut is the greatest of the superfoods, in my opinion. It's one of the easiest things to make. It is literally cabbage and salt. That is it. It is one of the greatest things you could have for gut health. I mean, gut health is a huge buzzword at the moment, obviously. Everyone's talking about gut health because it literally is linked to every single component of your body. So eating fermented foods are fantastic for, you know, helping with moods, helping with any sort of flus, everything. Everything is connected to the gut. And if you go and buy some sauerkraut in the shop, while properly made wild fermented sauerkraut, I'm not talking about the kraut you'll get in your, you know, your supermarket condiment aisle. That is not this type of sauerkraut we're talking about. That is the German style that's been then pickled with vinegar. So although it tastes absolutely delicious, the nutritional benefits are not going to be the same as if you're making a wild fermented kraut that you will find in the fridge aisle of any health food sort of shop. So it's literally massaging cabbage with salt to bring out all of the brine. The brine then ferments the cabbage, and then you eat it, and you are, you know, saving yourself a lot of money by making it yourself. It's a lot of fun massaging cabbage. It's like very cheap therapy, and having a spoonful of that a day is going to be extra beneficial to your gut.
So would you say you feel pretty mindful when you're doing it then?
Mindful. I am actually usually thinking about someone who's annoyed me that week and taking my massaging out on them on the cabbage. The poor cabbage gets a workout. But, you know, that's what I mean. It's using something that's, you know, a quarter of a cabbage that's left over from the week, and you go, well, what am I going to do with that? Well, I'm going to turn it into kraut, and all you need is a jar, you know, and a little bit of labour, and there you've got it, and you've saved yourself a lot of money, and you're looking after your gut, and it tastes delicious. It becomes very addictive, the acid that you get from kraut, from real kraut, and then when you start experimenting with the spices and adding other vegetables to it, or chili, ginger and garlic, which will turn it into more of like a kimchi style ferment, and it's just delicious and so good for you. And it's an old skill. I mean, it's been around for thousands of years.
Yeah, those Germans were really onto something.
actually, when I was researching it, and we run fermentation classes in Australia, apparently it was Genghis Khan who bought kraut to Europe.
Wow.
Bought it over when, I don't know how it all works, but yeah, apparently it's back that far, and someone else will probably ring into the podcast or write in and say that's not true, but that's certainly something I read.
Well, it sounds pretty convincing. I think that's one of those facts you want to store away for pub quiz.
Fun fact. Yeah, exactly. Pub quiz fact. Absolutely.
Exactly. So have you noticed more of a trend then towards pickling and fermenting?
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely. It's just one of those things, you know, that everything comes in cycles, and there's always a new trend every week. But pickling and preserving seems to have stuck around. I mean, my first book, Like Grandma Used to Make, came out in 2013, and the pickling and preserving thing was just becoming a huge thing in Australia. And that's when I just moved back to Australia from the UK, because I did live here for 10 years. And it's still around. In fact, it seems to be getting stronger and stronger.
Cool. I noticed another thing that comes up a lot in your book as well is using up food waste. Mm-hmm. So is that a big bugbear of yours?
That is a huge bugbear of mine, and that comes from my grandmother. Her house is like old Mother Hubbard's cupboard. You know, you rock up at her house with all of your friends because you go down to see Granny, and you think there's no way she's going to pull off a feast from this. There's nothing in the fridge. There's nothing in the cupboard. Next minute you sit down and you've got like this 3-course meal from nothing. And that is because that generation had to be very, very smart and resourceful with food. And once again, why I tell people, if they want to live sustainably, take a note from Granny, because they are fantastic when it comes to food waste. And in fact, one of my heroes, Michael Pollan, who's an American journalist in and around food and sustainability, along with Alice Waters, who was the founder of Slow Food USA and owns this incredible restaurant in Berkeley called Chez Panisse. Their manifesto is all around, if your grandmother didn't recognise it as food, it's not real food, which to me is so true, you know. Real food, no waste, no nonsense. It's not being stingy or scungy by reusing all of your food waste. It's called being smart and being sassy and being resourceful to me. When we were first trying to think of a title for this book, I wanted to call it Frugal, because that's my nan. She's frugal. But apparently there's a bit of a stigma around the word frugal in the UK. It sort of means, oh, you're a bit of a Scrooge. But to me, it's the smartest word in the planet, being frugal. It's long-term sustainability, and the only way we can do that is by reducing food waste. I mean, it's insane how much food goes to waste in both my country and the UK. It's horrendous.
Yes, I was just going to sort of say, I think one of the things that I noticed in the book that's really helpful is your section about freezing, mm-hmm. like things like leftover soup and yep. that kind of thing. And you've got almost like a ready-made stock there, ready for the next thing you make. And I just think that's a brilliant way. Just use up those last bits, because you always have that bit that's left in the pan.
There's always the bit.
What do I do with that bit? It seems wasteful to throw it away, exactly. But it's great to have a way to use it.
Even that bit of coffee, you know, you have one cup and you're already jittering for some reason that morning, and you've got that one extra cup of filter coffee. You put it in ice cubes, chuck it in the freezer. Next sunny day you get, put those ice cubes in a glass, top it up with some beautiful whole milk, and you've got yourself an iced coffee, you know, with a little bit of maple syrup or something, or a scoop of ice cream if you're feeling like treating yourself, or, you know, you've got those extra punnet of strawberries that you brought because it was a 2-for-1 in the supermarket, and you got suckered into it even though you're not going to be able to use them. Blitz them up with some of those leftover herbs you've got in there, put them in the ice cube tray and chuck them in some, you know, some sparkling water, and it's gorgeous for you, you know, when guests come over and you're not drinking alcohol, if that ever happens. and same with herbs. You can actually put herbs into ice cube trays, top it up with olive oil. Next time you go to cook some veggies or a piece of meat, pop out one of those cubes and you've got some herby olive oil. It's just thinking before you just instantly throw something in the garbage. And most of us do it, you know. We live in this culture where food is actually too cheap, way too cheap, when you think about the energy and the resources and that go into making food. And we've just grown into this habit, and we've got to break the habit of just chucking things out and not opening the carton of milk to smell it. You know, using our granny skills, using our gut instinct would have always you know, smelt the meat before throwing it out, not just looked at a use-by date and dumped it in the bin before opening it. You know, they're the prime examples of granny skills to me. Prodding a chicken, and if the juices run clear, then you know it's cooked. Not getting some old thermometer out and measuring it for exact temperature. You know, we just seem to have lost our way a little bit. And, you know, I am not perfect by any means, and I fall into these traps all the time. But then I think of my granny and her granny skills, and I go, you know what, I can actually use that and don't throw it out after all.
So do you think researching these books has made you more creative in your approach to waste?
Definitely. I think committing to a cause, i.e. going, all right, well, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is and live this granny skills stuff. And like I said, I'm not perfect. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you do buy something from the shop because you don't have time. But I certainly feel like, yeah, really creative. Some of the things I come up with, my poor boyfriend as my guinea pig, some of the things I come up with end up being so delicious. I go, why didn't I think of that before? You know, I remember back growing up, because I grew up in a rural country town. My one of my friends, Tammy McArdle, growing up, her mum used to make the best chocolate cake I'd ever had, and she used to put a cup of mashed potato in it.
What?
Yes, I know, that sounds completely ridiculous. It's delicious. Putting a cup of mashed potato, you've always got a, you know, that you always think you're going to eat more mash than you do, and there's always a cup left over. Chuck it in the fridge, make yourself a chocolate cake, and put a cup of mashed potato in it. Delicious. It keeps it super moist. I know, it sounds very weird, but it's very true.
Okay, so what other strange tips have you come up with lately?
Oh, gosh. Strange tips. My goodness. Well, I mean, I just put things in everything, in beetroot in my chocolate cakes, carrot in my baking is very easy to use up leftovers, making muffins and stuff like that, you know, that last little bit of zucchini you've got in your fridge, grating that in there. But definitely I use all my coffee grinds for everything. I put it in my vases to extend the shelf life on my flowers. I make a body scrub just by putting a couple tablespoons of... So when you've got the leftover filter coffee, you just put it in a container and dry it out a little bit. Mix it with some raw cocoa powder and some sort of raw sugar. A bit of coconut oil, mix that up. Makes the best body scrub ever. It's super exfoliating. Coffee grinds are great for cellulite and stimulating your blood. So they're a great start to the morning, and plus the coffee in the shower wakes you up. The coffee smell as well. It's just about giving yourself that extra minute to think about it before you just instantly react. I think there's nothing that you can't use, I don't believe. Nothing at all.
Wow. So do you find that you don't really throw stuff away then?
No, and my boyfriend hates it. He's like, how many things in here are left over from this week? I'm like, don't worry, we'll figure it out. You know, making a frittata, or make an omelette, or... I throw all the leftover roast veggies through some quinoa and it makes a beautiful salad, and he has to take it to school. Or, you know, my favourite day is Sunday, because we always tend to have a roast chook. And then I make broth with it, and then I experiment with my broth with, you know, if I've got a bit of ginger or some turmeric or all of those leftover herbs, they all go in there, and then that broth then turns into first a veggie soup, and then couple days in I get a ham hock, or you know, an old soup, a few other bones from my local butcher, and then chuck them in there, and then that turns into pea and ham soup. You know, just think before you throw it out. I'm sure just by having a Google these days, you know, have a Google search and you'll be able to find a million and one uses for anything at all.
Okay, another thing I was looking at in the book is how many of the things that you have in there would make really good Christmas presents.
Yes.
Since, you know, it's around the corner.
It is, I know. Someone said the other day, it was like, gosh, I don't even know, like 11 more weekends or something ridiculous. I don't know where this year's gone, but perfect gifts. Body butters, blushes, you know, infused oils, bath salts that look so pretty in a jar, making candles with gorgeous Christmas spices in it, you know, like cinnamon and cloves, and making herbal wine, which, you know, basically doubles up as mulled wine. You can sell it as some sort of medicinal something, whatever you want, tinctures and tonics, dried teas, all of these things are things that people spend quite a lot of money on when they're buying a gift from a fancy food hall, you know, or a department store, and they're actually so easily done. And I challenge anyone that tells me they would rather have a bought gift than a thoughtfully made, you know, homemade gift. I just think there's something so special about getting a gift from someone that's taken the time out to make it for you, I think. And you just, or you just get a bunch of girlfriends together and you have a pickling weekend, get some wine, have a cheese board, all get your chopping skills on, chuck it in some big pots, jar it up. Everyone takes 6 jars home and, you know, you've got your office secret Santas done, or, you know, for all of those, you know, relatives that you've got, a nice little gift, make a little gift tag, put some ribbon around it. You know, you've made 6 gifts in one go and had a fun gossip catch-up weekend with your girlfriends, you know, or a hen show or that sort of thing. It becomes, I don't know, getting together with a bunch of people and doing something like this is something really nice in it. Certainly at passata season, so in tomato season, there's nothing more gratifying than getting a huge table. And Italian people have done it forever. All of these things are very, you know, part of people's cultures, getting together and manning, you know, manpower, everyone bringing their tomatoes and making passata for the year. You know, there's something really lovely about that. And yeah, this stuff makes fantastic gifts.
Yeah, this reminds me, actually, I was reading a book called The Little Book of Hygge, which is about, have you known much about Hygge?
No.
It's basically the Danish term for coziness.
Hygge, so Sydney's
I'm
book.
Saying it wrong.
No, I'm not. I'm saying it Australian wise. Yeah, that's Hygge. I met her actually at River Cottage Spring Fair. We were both doing some workshops down there, and she was telling me all about it, and I think it's so lovely, and it is exactly that. Absolutely, it's a really good comparison. When we were having a beautiful chat about what I'm doing and what she was writing about, and they're so similar, such similar philosophies as well.
Yeah, because I guess it's about slowing down, it's about spending time with people, and actually that ties in really well to the granny skills.
Definitely.
Because that's what our ancestors would have done.
Definitely. Being mindful and knowing your neighbours and knowing your community and knowing that, you know, Meryl down the road's got a huge lemon tree and I've got a orange tree, and why don't we swap things and why don't we talk to each other and why don't you make, you know, you might take some roses from someone's garden and why don't you in return give them some rose moisturiser, or do you know what I mean? It's just being part of a community again. And that's, I know so many people that don't know their neighbours, and that breaks my heart a little bit, because growing up in a country town, everyone knows everyone. But, you know, even these days in country towns, people sort of move in and don't even bother to knock on the next door neighbours and borrow a cup of sugar, so to speak. And I think all of these principles force us to just stop and breathe and be in the moment and, you know, just chill. Chill and get to know each other. It's a much nicer way of living our lives, which are very short, you know.
So do you do a lot of sort of trading produce with other people, then, things that you've made?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I put out a lot of call-outs on our Granny Skills Facebook when I need things, and it's beautiful. I went away. I go away a lot, and I had a bunch of kombucha scobies, and I knew I wasn't going to be able to look after them, and my freezer was full of everything else, and so I just put a little post on the Granny Skills page and said, anyone want some scobies? And I got all these comments, yes, 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 and next thing I know, someone's rocked up on my door and bought me something, a little jar of jam, and I've given them the scobies, and it's just so nice, so nice.
Okay, so for our listeners who don't know, would you mind explaining what a scoby is?
Oh, so a scoby is the floaty bit that lives in the kombucha. It's the active microorganism that makes kombucha happen. So kombucha is fermented tea. Once again, very, very, very good for your gut health. You can buy it pretty much everywhere now. It's a bit more mainstream, but it's the living part, almost like the mother, that will form layers, and then you peel off the layers and you'll give them to your mates, and that's how you make your fermented tea.
Yeah. So for people who don't know, the mother is like a living thing that you get inside of vinegar usually,
isn't it? Absolutely.
It's meant to be really good for you.
It's very good for you, and kombucha is very good for you too. So it's one of those things. And that's a beautiful thing about kombucha, or kefir is another one. Kefir grains, you know, you grow your grains and then you can do it. They're actually sometimes hard to get. So you divvy them up and you give them to your friends, and then they give them to their friends. And before you know it, you've got all these new sort of kefir kombucha loving friends. It's great.
That reminds me a bit. Have you ever come across Hermann the German friendship cake?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Someone just brought that up just recently and it made me really want to go and do that. I need to do that. I think we need to do that. Let's start that trend again. Or are you already on it?
Oh, I've been involved in the Hermann the German. Just to explain for people, it's basically you create, I guess you would call it a starter culture, and you feed it with sugar and flour, and it grows.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, you have to split it and give it to your friends.
Yeah.
So it really spreads this thing around.
Yeah.
And after a certain amount of time, you've been feeding it, you get to make this this cake, this German apple cake, which is quite tasty. It has sort of a bit of a sour taste, a little bit like a sourdough. But these things seem to do the rounds every few years. You'll come across Hermann the German friendship cake.
It's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And it's the same thing with, you know, sourdough bread. A lot of people share their sourdough starters. Some people won't because they're quite protective of it if they've got a really good one. But it's the same sort of thing. It causes conversation, and conversation leads to friendship, and friendship leads to community, and community leads to people that care about, you know, their general world around them. And so I think there's something in bringing back the way our grannies used to live, for sure.
Although it is a little bit like keeping a pet, isn't it?
Definitely. If you've got to look after, and same with your kombucha. I mean, you've got to babysit it, you've got to feed it, or it will die. Same with your sauerkraut. You've got to burp your kraut for the first week. You've got to burp your sauerkraut. If you're making it in a jar and not in a crock, for the first day, you know, for the first 7 days, on day 3, 5, and 7, you have to burp it to let the CO2 out without letting the oxygen in, and it makes a little noise. And so we call it burping our babies. So you've got to babysit it for the first week.
What will happen if you don't burp it? It's not going to explode, is it?
It probably won't explode, but it will leak everywhere. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You definitely don't want that.
No, so you do have to babysit it. Yeah. Or give it to someone to babysit for you.
Another thing I like about your book is that you've thought about space saving as well. So you've got little mini herb pots that people can grow themselves, because not everybody's got a garden.
Yeah.
So do you have any tips for people who don't have a lot of space for growing their own stuff?
Think about the herbs that you use the most and the ones that cost you the most when you buy them from the supermarket, and companion plant them in an old pot. Another gorgeous gift actually is the cocktail garden recipe, and you can either give it with the bottle of gin or drink the bottle of gin yourself. But think about the herbs that you use in a cocktail, you know, like rosemary and sage and mint and thyme and lavender. Plant them in an old pot all together and with a bottle of gin as a gift for a friend. That's a gorgeous idea. And if you've got a cocktail garden on your balcony, or you know, if you're lucky enough to have a garden, I know that's not the case for everyone in big cities. It just means that you're not constantly nipping out for a, you know, £2 packet of herbs and then wasting half of them if you've got them growing in a balcony. And it is extremely easy to grow even the smallest amount of food, even if it's just a basil plant. There's so much joy in growing something yourself and picking it fresh.
Just going back to the beauty products, which I think we've mentioned before, when I was reading it, I did this thing where I suddenly have my mum's voice in my head, which happens more and more these days. Where I was reading with some of the shampoos, and I think it might have been the conditioner, have coconut oil in it. And my mum's voice immediately went in my head, but won't that clog up the drain?
No, it doesn't clog up the drain. The hot water, if you're in a hot shower, it doesn't clog up the drain. Not at all, no.
Good, because that was weighing on my mind.
No, it doesn't. If you think about some of the stuff that goes down our drains, some of the bad stuff, coconut oil is not going to damage your drain.
It's not going to make a massive fat burg.
And no, because it's only a small amount in these recipes. So from that small amount, a minute amount is going down at any one time. So it's not like, you know, you've got a litre of coconut oil going down your drain at one time. It's not like that. So, yeah.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd ask that. Okay, do you want to tell me a little bit about things that you're working on at the moment?
Yeah, so I'm very grateful to be... I'm actually in London because we've just photographed 4 more books. So The Art of the Natural Home is... we have a mini-series coming out next May. So that'll be May 2018. And that came from... There were so many recipes tested and written during the process of the first one. We were like, gosh, you know, there's so many books in this. And we wanted to break off into specific topics so that if people weren't necessarily interested in doing the whole home, but they wanted to try just the cleaning. So we have a cleaning, a face and body book, Herbs for Health, which is around using herbs more traditionally for health stuff. So tinctures and tonics and herb pestos and herb butters and, you know, cough drops and all of those sort of things. Then we have edible flowers, and that's really because I'm obsessed with eating flowers, some of which don't have much taste but look beautiful on a plate, and some of which have amazing health benefits. So there's a little beautiful edible, and I always get asked, oh, can I eat that flower or not eat that flower? I think it's one of those things where people are a bit confused by which one, so it's a little bit of a reference guide as well. So they're 4 very small books. They're going to come in a gift box or can be bought separately, so that's very exciting. And then I'm working on another book as well, another bigger book, which is about nature in general. So it's very exciting. There's lots of great things on. I'm still running workshops. I'm back in the UK to do some more events and stuff next year. And, just generally trying to spread the love and empower people and get them involved in using their granny skills and also having more to do with their grandparents as well, and asking them, how did you used to do this? You know, have you got any tips and tricks? They're a wealth of knowledge and skills and resources, and just want to be part of, you know, our lives as their family, and want to share what they learn. And I guarantee you, ask your granny something next time and you'll learn a million and one things from her, and your grandpa as well.
That's a great way to end this, I think. So would you like to give a little bit of a plug for your book now?
Yes, thank you. So it's called The Art of the Natural Home by Kyle Books. And I believe in the UK it's very easily available. It's in all of the usual places like Waterstones. It's available online and on Amazon and those things. And I am Granny Skills, or one word, on Instagram, and Granny Skills, 2 words, on Facebook. So please join our community. We love people to share recipes and photos and their adventures and talk about their grannies and talk about their granny skills, and join us on this beautiful journey.
Yep, so just get more in touch with your inner granny.
Find your inner granny. That is what I write in all of my books when I sign them. Get your granny on, or find your inner granny. 100%.
That sounds brilliant. We'll definitely be signing up for that. So thank you for joining us for this podcast, and we'll be back again very soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah.
Visit our website, calmmoment.com, to try some free projects from the Art of the Natural Home. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please get in touch with us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram @InTheMoment Magazine, or email us at calmmoment@immediate.co.uk.